Roll down tide.
From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, this is the Beer Garden presented by Oxford Crystal.
I'd like to hear a little bit more conviction in your take, though. There was a lot of maybes, a lot of what ifs, a lot of questions. You need to just get on here. You need to fire and put me in a position where I have to tell you that you're wrong.
And now, here's your host, Neil McCready.
Nice. Nice.
Welcome into another edition of the Oxford Crystal Beer Garden. College football season has finally arrived, and we'll talk about it here today on the show with Ryan Brown, WJOX, in Birmingham. No one knows college football much better than he does, and so we'll talk to him about it here as we are on the eve of the first full Saturday of college football around the country. I know everyone is excited. Most of us are traveling. I'm recording this on a Thursday afternoon. I'll probably be in or on my way to Houston for Ole Miss and Texas Tech by the time you hear this. So there's games all over the country. We'll talk to Ryan about a lot of those, just about the state of everything as well in a minute. First, let me tell you about the Oxford Crystal, Highway 6 West in Oxford. It's right next to the Oxford Exxon. So if you're on your way out, if you are one of the guys, one of the people who are saying, hey, I'm gonna drive to Houston, God bless you. On your way out, stop at the Oxford Exxon, fill up, and then stop at the Oxford Crystal and fill up there as well. Grab you a big cup of that Gold Peak coffee. You'll need it to stay awake for your long drive. You can grab $2 square meals, a $3 square meal, $4 square meal. You kind of figure out how that works, right? You add a little bit as you go, depending on just how hungry you are. Or if you're real hungry, you can get the 12 crystal combo, 12 crystals, two medium fries, and two medium drinks. And speaking of drinks, purchase a large drink and you have a chance to win concert tickets, the Sprite concert giveaway at Crystal going on right now. We're coming to you from the Clark Ford Studios. Clark Ford's in Amory, Mississippi. 662-257-1900 is the number. Call the number. Ask for Corey Clark. Tell Corey what new Ford you are looking for. Maybe a couple of vehicles you're looking for. You want a couple of quotes. He'll send those to you within 15 minutes in business hours. Right to the bottom line. No haggling. Just a great deal from Clark Ford. And then it gets even better. You can take my word for it. I'm driving a Ford F-150 from Clark Ford. The service is fantastic. You get what you want. Corey will take care of you. He wants to be your car driver, your car person. He wants to be your truck person. Service after the sale is great. Delivery options, all of those things. Let Corey become your car or truck person. You won't regret it. We are also brought to you by Community Mortgage. It's located in Oxford, Memphis, DeSoto County, and Chattanooga. It's 30 years old this year. It's one of the oldest companies in the Southeast. All of the underwriting and the processing is done in Memphis, so you're getting local underwriting that understands your market. It's also the leader in condo financing in the Oxford market. So ask Jason Lowe about Community Mortgage's float down option. It allows you to lock in the current rate, but if rates go down before you close, you can get the lower rate. It's J Lowe, that's J-L-O-W-E, at communitymtg.com. And we're brought to you by Strategic Partners in Media. SPM is a full-service advertising agency that works with businesses of all types, big or small, Fortune 500 companies to startups. SPM can help your advertising needs for TV, radio, print, and every facet of social and digital media. Look, here's why SPM is really good and different than other ad firms. They handle everything in-house. They don't sub their work out. The writing, the production, the editing is all done solely by their staff and crafted uniquely for their clients. And lastly, an Ole Miss grad and a Mississippian is a partner in the firm. So give them a call and see just how great they are. It's Austin at strategicpartnersmedia.com. And before we get to Ryan, let me tell you this podcast also brought to you by Captain John Fryer and Tuna Chaser Charters in Biloxi. John handles inshore and offshore fishing expeditions from 4 to 12 hours. He knows where to put you on the fish that you want to catch. A popular trip for visitors that don't have as much time as the inshore trips for speckled trout and triple tail, sometimes called blackfish. You can reach John through his website, TunaChaserCharters.com, his Facebook page, or you can call John, 228-348-7817. So without further ado, let's get to Ryan Brown of WJOX and kick off the 2018 college football season. Ryan Brown is the co-host of the Jocks Roundtable on WJOX in Birmingham. You can listen to them online if you're not living in the Birmingham area at jocksfm.com. That's joxfm.com. He's also on Sunday night television. They let Ryan Brown be on television now. 10:30 on Sunday nights, ABC 3340 there in Birmingham. On Twitter, it's Ryan Brown WJOX. And for those of you, and you know who you are, who always like to ask, hey, what station's the game on? You can just look at Ryan Brown's Twitter account. He does a video where he absolutely gives you the rundown. Not only that, he gives you a plan of attack if you're going into the college football Saturday from start to finish. You're free to deviate on your own, of course, but if you just want someone to guide you through on probably the sort of mainstream games involving SEC teams, Ryan Brown can do that. Man, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
It's always fun, Neil. That's a new project I'm doing this year. Our station's doing a lot more videos. So I'm doing that one where every week I call it the Jocks Man Cave. And every week I give you a three TV setup. I tell you the most important, what I think is the most important game in the early time slot, the 2:30 time slot, the prime time slot, and the late night slot. And I give you three games. You've got a three TV setup. I'll tell you where to put them. And as it turns out, my 11 o'clock game number one, Ole Miss, Texas Tech. I anticipate this being an extremely entertaining football game.
Yeah, I do too. I think it's going to be really exciting. But I'll get to that in a second. Yeah. I'm curious because this is indeed sort of how you watch college football every Saturday, right? I mean, you man cave it with multiple TVs and sort of plan your point of your attack. So how do you sort of figure it out? Because I know, and I want to get to some details in a second. I know that each week, because of what you do and where you are, you've got to get Auburn watched if possible, and you got to get Alabama watched if possible. That's usually a good 7 hours of TV, and sometimes those two teams overlap. So how many of the TVs that you are using are also attached to a DVR or something along those lines?
Yeah, that's a good question. I do DVR a couple of games. I'm DirecTV, so I can DVR a couple at the same time. What I look at is, so normally my main TV is on Alabama or Auburn, depending on who's got the bigger game. Now, used to, they never played at the same time. They do it so much now because of the new TV package and the fact that SEC or CBS gets the exclusive deal. You know, if they're not on CBS, there's a good chance they're playing at the same time. And then I'll bounce around on my other two screens on just other games I find interesting. And that's the thing about doing what we do in Birmingham is Alabama and Auburn is very, very important, but Birmingham's very much an SEC melting pot. So we'll get phone calls about the Georgia game, the Tennessee game, the Ole Miss game, Mississippi State game. And I'm just genuinely interested in those games, too. And on top of all of that, you know, week three, Alabama plays Ole Miss. Well, you know, it helps me to have seen Ole Miss, so I can read about them all I want. You know, I can read your coverage or I can read, you know, whatever. But if
I'm the only one. Nobody else covers them. Just me. It's it.
That's the only one I could really think of. So, you know, if I do that and I've watched them, I feel like I'm, you know, I can talk better about them. I'm more of a visual learner anyway. So, and I'm just genuinely a fan of college football. I mean, I know I'm in Birmingham, so I'm supposed to be an Alabama or Auburn fan, which I do want them both to do well, but I'm just a college football fan. I will watch, you know, that Florida State Virginia Tech game Monday night will be very interesting to me. Not just because it's on, but just because I'm a college football fan. Neil, I watched a good bit of Colorado State and Hawaii last Saturday night. Now, I went to Jacksonville State, and they were playing at the same time, so I was more interested in that game. But that Colorado State-Hawaii game was very entertaining. And, I mean, that's what I enjoy doing. I enjoy watching college football. So I don't – the logos on the helmet don't really bother me as long as it's a pretty good game.
I know you also like to grill and such. Now, do you allow that to be part of your Saturday, or is that too much of a damn distraction?
Well, so here's my issue with that. So – my man cave setup is in my basement, which is underground and no light, no windows, not a daylight basement. It's an underground basement. So it is frigid in there, which is what I want. I keep the lights pulled down. It's dark. There are times where I don't even realize it's gotten dark outside until I come upstairs to the kitchen. And my grill setup is on the deck, which is one level above that, which is my main level, the main level of my house. So the garage level is where my man cave is. And then, you know, just our main living level is where the grill and all is. So if were I to grill, I would have to, you know, come up and down the stairs a lot. So I generally don't do that as much on Saturdays, but occasionally, you know, if it's not a real hot TV window, like sometimes the 2:30 window's only got one good game, I might just turn it on in my upstairs den while I grill or something like that. So it's not 100% uncommon, but it is fairly uncommon on Saturdays. Now, I'll tell you this, though, my wife gets into it. She's not a football – I mean, she knows what happens, but she doesn't sit down and watch the game. She might sit and watch 2 or 3 minutes with me. But this is one of the many reasons I love my wife. The first Saturday of the season, she does a huge spread for breakfast, and like a celebratory breakfast, and does like finger food, like football dip and stuff like that for the whole day, stuff that will last all day for me. And then normally she just takes the kids and disappears, or she disappears and the kids do their own thing. Sad to say, that makes you sound like a horrible parent, but and just leaves it to me. So that first Saturday is always kind of like a celebration here at the Brown House.
That's very good on her part. She's
Yeah.
Does she have anything where that she's real into that when it comes out, like the Grammys or the Oscars or something?
No.
That's your payback day?
I'll tell you what. I guess it wasn't a payback day, but I think I earned a bunch of points for this. So I can't remember if I told this story last time I was on, but my wife is a huge fan of the TV show Fixer Upper. Are you familiar with this show?
I am familiar.
On HGTV?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. So her 40th birthday was last summer, and it was our 17th wedding anniversary, which, you know, it's not like a huge significant number other than the fact she's put up with me for 17 years. But her 40th birthday and her birthday and our anniversary are within 5 days. So they hit very close. So I told her, I said, look, it's your 40th birthday. Why don't you pick somewhere you want to go, you know, within reason, you know, Antarctica. We're not going to go visit the penguins, but, you know, within, you know, Greece or something like that, you know, within reason, we'll go. And she said, I'll tell you where I want to go is Waco, Texas. And I said, you got to be kidding me. Waco, Texas? And she goes, I just want to go see the Fixer Upper. I want to go visit their store. I've read that you can, you know, take a tour and see some of the houses that they've done that I've seen on TV. I just want to go do that. I was like, okay, here, I'll cut a deal with you. How about we stay in Dallas, Fort Worth for like 5 days and we'll make a day trip down to Waco? She goes, deal. So we did that, and it was a blast. We had an awesome time. And I think taking her on the Fixer Upper trip, probably it either made up for the 17 years of misery I've given her, or it bought me 5 to 10 more years. I'm not sure which.
That's marriage counseling 101 right there. That's good stuff. That's I'm impressed.
That was a fun trip.
Yeah.
You know, I've seen the show with her, and I'm not opposed to the show. I think it's, you know, a good clean show, and, you know, they seem to do well, and they seem to be nice people. But I'm far from a fan of the show, but she's a huge fan. She's seen every episode. So I didn't have a ton of interest in it, but it really was an interesting trip. And Waco's a pretty cool little college town. So we had a blast on that trip. That was last July and August. So that was a blast.
Yeah, I'm with you on that show. It's not a show that I would wake up in the morning and go, I can't wait to watch Fixer Upper. But if it's on and I'm sitting there, it's absolutely tolerable, and sometimes it's actually entertaining. So I'm cool with that show.
Yeah,
I'm cool with that show.
Yeah, and my wife loves it, and it's something. You know, look, my passion is the Miami Dolphins. And much of the same way your passion is the Cubs, mine is the Dolphins. And on a Sunday, as much as she can tolerate me being upset at the Dolphins, which with the Dolphins, that is quite frequent, she'll sit down and watch that with me. So I feel that I owe it to her. And there are a few things that we have in common that we like. I'll tell you one, it's on Amazon Prime. It's Man in the High Castle. I don't know if you've ever seen that,
or you may have
read the books.
No, I've not seen or read the book.
Yeah, and she really liked that, which is interesting because it just didn't seem like it was right up her alley. And we'll watch that, but they only release it like 10 episodes at a time on Amazon, so we can burn through it, you know, in a few nights. We started Peaky Blinders together on Netflix. I like the dark comedies. Like, I loved Breaking Bad. She did not like it. And I'd love to get her. I don't know if you've seen Ozark with Jason Bateman.
Yeah. We started that one.
Tremendous.
Yeah, I loved it. I think Laura liked it, but it got a little intense. And she was like,
oh, yeah.
She was like, hey, can we kind of take a break? And we were going to come back to it. And then we got into Goliath.
Which, I haven't seen that.
It's on Amazon Prime, Billy Bob Thornton. I've heard some people say they don't like it. I've heard other people say they love it. I think it's one of the best shows I've ever watched. So we watched, we binge watched season one of that, and season two is out. I know season two of Ozark, I think, comes out maybe tomorrow.
Yeah, it's on the 31st. Yeah, tomorrow. And I love Jason Bateman. I mean, he's made a revival in his career. I find him hilarious. And, I mean, even, like, a lot of people panned this movie and said it wasn't good. But Game Night that came out, we watched it together. I found it hilarious. I think Jason Bateman is one of the funniest people on earth. And I like dark comedies as well. So that's – Ozark is like my dream come true. It's Jason Bateman in a dark comedy. And he does – he plays it so well. I think Ozark is tremendous. It to me, it's got potential. It's only done one season, but it's got potential to be Breaking Bad good to me if they can stick with it.
Okay, last question before we actually get to the games, because I'm now sort of intrigued about how you spend your Saturday. I know you're not a big drinker. You're not a teetotaler, but you're not a big drinker. Do you have a couple of cold ones early, or do you wait until later in the day, or are you having to be, hey, I've got to be cognizant of what's going on. I've got to almost not imbibe at all on Saturday.
Well, this is going to be for a lot of your followers and listeners going to be a really sad answer, because I've never been a big beer drinker. I just never have developed a taste for it. And I've tried, but there's never been one. And people have given me, oh, you try this one, you'll like this one. And I've just never developed a taste. So I don't drink beer, which it seems like it would be, you know, I wouldn't mind having one or two during a football game. I just don't drink it. So occasionally, oh God, this is so sad. occasionally I'll have like a hard cider.
That's okay. It's okay.
I'm laughing at myself for saying it. I'll have a hard cider. God, that sounds awful. But primarily, my drink of choice, as a matter of fact, I'm sitting out on my back deck in my screened in talking to you right now with a Yeti cup full of Arnold Palmer, which, I mean, it's not alcoholic, obviously. It's just a mix of tea and lemonade. And my wife and I, she barely drinks it. I pretty much drink. I'm the only one in the family that drinks it. But she'll take two packets of lemonade mix and put it in a tea pitcher and then brew four tea bags in it, fill it with water, you know. And that's all I drink at home, really. Like, I'm such a boring guy. I'll tell you a vice of mine that I really, really like is IBC root beer. Do you like that? In a glass bottle?
I've had it. I'm not a big root beer fan, which is funny because when I was a kid, I loved it. And somewhere between being a kid and being me, I sort of lost my taste for it.
Yeah, I like root beer, and that IBC is so good. And it'll get that glass bottle of, oh man, it's freezing cold. So I'll have one of those during the primetime game. But I drink it in moderation. Don't worry.
don't drive. If you mix, is it vodka that you can put with the Arnold Palmer that turns it into a John Daly?
Yeah, it makes it a John Daly. I love that. Yeah, I've had one of those. It's actually very, very good. I just, you know, I drink so infrequently. Like, I'm a very, like, maybe five times a year I'll have a mixed drink or something like that at a party or, you know, a hotel bar or something like that. So I do it so infrequently, I just don't even really have any on hand. But if I had some on hand, I would mix one of those because that is very good. That's probably, you know, my drink of choice would be the John Daly.
Okay, so let's get to some football. Actually, before we get to football, actual football, you correctly predicted, I think you even predicted a 2 or 3 game suspension for Urban Meyer when you were on. You said, hey, they'll do something to him because they have to. How bad of a look has that ended up being for Ohio State? As we record this on a Thursday afternoon, one of the Board of Trustees, Board of Regents, Board of whatever, quit today saying, hey, I was the one voice in there saying this doesn't add up. The memory stuff and all of this, it just doesn't add up. Now that it's done, what were your thoughts on what happened to Ohio State? And then along those lines, you're going to be watching a lot of football Saturday. A lot of you'll probably turn on the College Game Day show because it's just what people do. How much is the Urban Meyer storyline going to dominate the day?
Yeah, that's interesting. And real quick, do not forget, I want to come back. I, I made my playoff predictions off the cuff last time I was on, and I do need to change the Big Ten. I'm gonna cycle. Well, let me just do it real quick. So I've got Alabama, Clemson. I'm gonna keep Washington in, but instead of Ohio State, I'm going Wisconsin. I think Wisconsin ends up winning the Big Ten. So Alabama, Clemson, Wisconsin, and Washington. That's my college football playoff prediction. So I just wanted to get that on the record.
Okay, I think, and I'm with you. I think Ohio State's going to finish third or fourth in the Big Ten.
I mean, you look, that division's brutal. I mean, Michigan State is going to Brian Lewerke as their quarterback. Yeah, I think he's a really good quarterback.
Yep.
You know, within that division, I don't think Penn State, losing Joe Moorhead is a big loss for them. Saquon Barkley is a bigger loss, I think. You know, their leading returning rusher is Trace McSorley. So, you know, they got to find something in the run game. I'm not buying Michigan as much as some. I just, you know, again, I think Shea Patterson's fascinating to watch, and that Notre Dame-Michigan game is one I anticipate as much as any Saturday. But so anyway, yeah, Ohio State could easily finish third in that division and not even be that bad of a football team, really. That's the Big Ten East is the toughest division in football to me. But to answer your question, I think the one thing I missed on, though, Neil, is I gave Urban Meyer way too much credit, because I don't know if you remember, but I said I think he'll be contrite and he'll – you know, he'll come on, he'll do the apology tour, and he'll do the interview with Reese Davis or someone like that, and it'll be tearful, and he'll have Shelley sitting next to him, and they'll apologize. And he was anything but that. He was defiant in that news conference, and you could tell he did not think he should have been there, did not think he should be taking that suspension. I think you could tell at the end that there is certainly a fracture between he and the school president. I mean, there was a blow-by there that would make some college basketball coaches proud when he went in for the handshake. And, that's what blew me away, is how what the optics were like in that news conference. It took about 30 minutes for Courtney Smith's name to even come up. And then when Meyer was asked about it, he apologized. He just said, "I'm sorry we're in this situation." And he essentially said, "I'm sorry you were offended," which is no apology at all. And of course, he had to come back and, you know, trying to make it good on Twitter, but just the whole news conference had a bad tone and tenor to it, and I did not sense any sort of remorse or anything. The only thing I sensed was Urban Meyer thought there was no way he should have been there, yet Ohio State investigated itself, and you could tell even Ohio State said, "We don't trust our coach." I mean, you read their findings, and they didn't believe Urban Meyer, but you know, they decided football, winning football games, is more important, so we're going to keep him on. I think it's a big part of college game day. I know Tom Luganbill's on our show each week, and Tom's on that crew that's doing the game. It's McElroy, Luganbill, and Dave Pasch. And I would imagine, you know, obviously you've got to address it, because Urban Meyer's not on the sidelines. I mean, I think one of their beliefs is you can't just assume everybody knows all the stories, even though that's a big story. So, you know, at some point it deserves explanation as to why Ryan Day is the interim coach. But I just don't know how much you have to hammer it during the telecast. I don't know that it calls for that, because I think most people are tuning in just wanting to watch the game and not a rehash of all of that Urban Meyer situation.
All right, you mentioned Ole Miss and Texas Tech. I'll be on my way to Houston tomorrow. Probably when people are listening to this podcast, I'll be in the air, because I waited till the last minute to book my flight. Somebody's in trouble in Birmingham.
We got an issue here in the neighborhood. Don't know what's going on.
I waited till the last minute, and I'm going that makes sense to go from Memphis to Tampa and then to Houston. That's the route that I'm taking. So anyway, Ole Miss Texas Tech Saturday at 11 on ESPN, kind of one of the day's kickoff games, obviously. I'm with you. I think it's going to be really entertaining. I'm not as convinced as others that it's like 40-something to 40-something, because we never get those kind of games when everybody says we're going to get them. You keep up with it a lot. What do you expect from Ole Miss? What do you expect from Texas Tech?
You know, can I just do a real quick chase a rabbit? Had you told me, not that you booked at the last minute, but that your flight was Memphis to Tampa to Houston, you know, honest to goodness, you know what my immediate reaction would have been? Oh, the Cubs are in Tampa Friday? I assumed you were flying to get a Cubs game in.
You know what's funny, man? Here's what's funny is
You checked, didn't you?
They're in Philly Friday, and I did sort of look to see, is there any way that I could get from Philly to Houston really early? And it was like, no, there's really no way to do it. Yeah. So I was like, that's not
going to work. I mean, I got to fly anyway. I might as well fly to Philly first. I don't think, you know, I think that a team that gets in the 40s wins this game. I think I saw the Vegas total, and correct me if you've seen it differently. I think it, last time I looked, I think it was around 67, maybe.
I think that's right, yeah.
Yeah, so Vegas is, you know, they're looking at something in the mid-30s for each team. I think if either team gets to 40, I don't anticipate Wesley McGriff having an amazing defense this year for Ole Miss, but I do think they're going to score points on people. I mean, I think, not to fast forward too much, but I think that week three game against Alabama, at least on that side of the ball, is going to be a tricky one for Alabama if their secondary can't mature a little bit quickly.
See, everybody keeps saying that. I mean, look, you know tons of football, and you know Alabama really well, and I like Barrett Salee a lot, and Barrett has that game as he has the one game Alabama loses all year, and I mean obviously it'd be good for my business if Ole Miss made that game super competitive and even won it. It would certainly it wouldn't be hard to get podcast downloads in the month of October if Ole Miss beats Alabama. But dude, I don't see it. I just don't see that. I don't see that game. Here's my problem with it, and I know we're jumping way ahead, and we'll come back. I promise. I'm not going to hijack your thought. Ole Miss lost that game by 9 touchdowns last year.
I know.
You just don't close the gap like that. That gap doesn't get closed from 9 touchdowns to one, or it's or you win the game. I don't buy that.
Yeah. And I'm not saying Alabama's going to lose the game by any stretch. I just think on that, what I said was on that side of the ball, I think it can get tricky for Alabama. Where I don't think Ole Miss can hold up is Alabama's run attack, and Alabama's got an exceptionally good offensive line this year. So, but I don't think you're getting that in Texas Tech, and that's why I think this will be such an entertaining game. Kingsbury, you know, he's almost resigned himself to the fact that I'm just going to have to heave it all over the field and outscore anybody, you know, just win in a track meet. The good news is I don't think they're going to be as good offensively as they have been. I'm not sure this is going to be even a 500 Texas Tech team. So I think it's a game where Ole Miss, I think they've got a pretty sizable advantage here. I think this will be a fairly comfortable Ole Miss win, actually. I just think there'll be enough offense to make it interesting. But it wouldn't surprise me if it's like a, you know, I don't know, maybe like a 40-30 type Ole Miss win, 31, you know, something like that for Ole Miss. I think they can win this game fairly comfortably. I just think for about a month I've been thinking about this game, and I just envision those Ole Miss receivers running wild in Texas Tech secondary. There's just no way Texas Tech's going to have the pass rush to get to Jordan Talmu and the secondary to keep up with those NFL receivers. That's just not going to happen.
It would be such a big win for Matt Luke. I mean, I said the other day, someone said, you know, what's this game? And I said, look, at the end of the day, it's one game. I mean, there's no hot takeier day in all of what we do, being those of us who cover college football.
There's no
hot takeier day than Monday. Monday is going to be the hot takeiest of the hot takeiest days. The takes are going to be just scorching hot, and most of them are going to end up looking foolish because people overreact like mad to one game. And at the end of one game, for Ole Miss, if they win, it's a big win. Does it change anything fundamentally about your program? No. If you lose, it hurts. It's a loss that potentially really stings because of the way the schedule falls and as the schedule comes in. But it's still just one loss.
It is, but let me ask you this. Well, first of all, let me just say, we've talked about this on our show today. It's the 4-year anniversary of probably the hot takiest Thursday night game ever.
Yes.
Do you remember the reaction to Kenny Hill and Texas A&M? And we thought, my Lord. I mean, I remember people, and I think I said it. Not only is Texas A&M going to be fine after Johnny Manziel, they're probably better with Kenny Hill.
Yeah, I remember that game because I was covering Ole Miss. If I remember right, I was covering Ole Miss Vanderbilt in Nashville later that night in what turned out to be a fantastic game.
Yep.
And so
I remember that now.
I watched the first half of A&M in South Carolina at the hotel, and then I went over to Vanderbilt and I watched the end of it before Ole Miss and Vandy kicked off. And I remember thinking the same thing, like, oh man, look at A&M. Oh wow, look at A&M.
I mean, up and down the field, man, up and down the field on South Carolina.
Because we all thought Carolina was going to be a great team, and then we found out that Carolina had all sorts of chemistry issues. And we take a break from our interview with Ryan Brown to tell you that this podcast is also brought to you by LB's Meat Market, 2008 University Avenue in Oxford, 662-259-2999. It's the freshest cuts in Oxford. If you're not making the trip to Houston this weekend, maybe you are going to hang out on Saturday, start your day with a Crystal breakfast, and then do some grilling maybe after the Ole Miss game. Lots of college football on after the Rebels and the Red Raiders are done. Maybe you're going to be watching Auburn and Washington that afternoon, Alabama and Louisville. There's games all up and down the dial into the evening. So Michigan, Notre Dame, all of those games. You want to go to LB's. They have the freshest cuts in all of Oxford. The bone-in ribeyes are fantastic. Strips, fillets, brisket. You can put a brisket on early on Saturday and take it off in plenty of time to enjoy Saturday night. Ground round for some burgers, the best burgers you'll have. Poultry from free-range Joyce Farm Chicken there. And then also pork from the Home Place Pastures in Como, seafood fresh from the Gulf of Mexico. Whatever you want there at LB's, they've got it. Sample the sausages. The chicken sausages are my favorite, but they've got fresh sausage, smoked sausage, pork, the Swayze sausage, the spicy bacon sausage. It's all there. Fresh boudin, the Oxford Italian. Everything that you could want is there at LB's. They also, right there on your left when you walk in the door, they've got a beer selection, kind of a craft beer selection. Grab a six-pack. Make your own six-pack. Instead of the normal price of $9, you get it for $6 just by telling Greg Jones and the people at LB's that you heard about it on the Oxford Crystal Beer Garden. Again, 662-259-2999. You owe it to yourself to try LB's Meat Market. Now back to our interview with Ryan Brown of WJOX on the Billy's Pecans Hotline. But, yeah, that's my point, is you got to be so careful. Like, the game that I'm getting ready to ask you about in a minute is going to be the hot takiest game of all time. Auburn and Washington. They are going the hot takes at 6 o'clock on Saturday about Auburn and Washington. Dude, are going to – the guy that does cold takes, you know, he's going to be just saving. He is just going to be saving stuff, man. I mean, it is because whoever loses that game – especially if it's Auburn. If Auburn loses, everyone's going to say, Auburn's done, man. Auburn's got this really brutal schedule, and, oh, God, they're done. That's the end. The truth is they're not. I mean, whoever wins that game gets a really cool resume item early in the deal, but they still have a chance to make a playoff. Washington could lose this game and still compete for the national title in January.
You know, and I think that's what will happen, by the way. I mentioned, you know, Washington is one of my playoff teams. I think they'll lose this game. But I think they can lose this game and be a one-loss Pac-12 champion and be just fine, you know, because as you noticed in my picks, I think the Big 12 gets left out, and I do not think the SEC gets two teams in this year. Listen, if Auburn loses, the national capital of those hot takes will be in Birmingham, Alabama on our shows.
Yeah, and you'll love it.
Yeah. But here's the thing Auburn is facing. And this is hard to do. Of their last five, when they play Washington, their last five games against FBS opponents have been against top 10 teams. Think about that for a minute now. They played Georgia. They played the FCS Cupcake tweener game. They played Alabama. They played Georgia. They played Central Florida. They played Washington. That's almost impossible to have that kind of stretch this day and age in college football, yet that's what's facing Auburn. And I bring that up because they won the Georgia game and they won the Iron Bowl, but then they lost to Georgia in the SEC championship game. They lost to Central Florida. In the meantime, before those losses, Gus Malzahn got a massive contract extension.
I was going to say, they might have lost to Jimmy Sexton also before they lost to either one of the other games.
There's no doubt Jimmy took the W there. But they, I mean, if they lose this game, then all of a sudden Auburn fans, you already hear it a little bit. After the Central Florida loss, Malzahn got that contract extension and lost the next two games. You know, one of them was an SEC championship game, and one of them was, you know, it is what it is, the Central Florida game. But if you lose this one, it becomes more and more of a narrative. And, yes, with that difficult Auburn schedule, Neil, it's almost impossible to see Auburn lose that Washington game and then win every other game. I mean, they've still got to go to Mississippi State. They've got to go to Georgia. They've got to go to Alabama. And then that's discounting any slip-ups against an LSU, which is always a difficult game for Auburn for whatever reason, against an Ole Miss, you know, against an Arkansas.
At Mississippi State, like you said, man.
It's a brutal schedule. So I actually think, in terms of the playoff, neither team to me is dead with a loss here. I do think the road is more difficult for Auburn just because you have to step back and say, are they going to be able to lose that game and then sweep the remaining 11? That seems unlikely, and it would, even though they could have been in as a two-loss team last year, if only they had beaten Georgia in the championship game, you just wonder how many chances a two-loss team is going to get in this college football playoff.
Yeah, I know, and I keep waiting for a two-loss conference champion team to get left out so that we can start talking about expanding the thing to make it work.
Yeah.
I'm an eight team guy, so.
Okay. But don't forget you had that with Penn State. They were a two-loss conference champion that got left out. The only problem was the team from their conference got in front of them. So the outcry wasn't as great because Ohio State was the team that got in, right?
Yeah, we've talked about this before, you and I have. The one, if you told me I could go back in college football and change one game, I would go back and change the 4th-and-25 game, and I would let Ole Miss tackle Hunter Henry, and let, because Ole Miss goes 10-2, and then they would have beaten Florida. Ole Miss would have been 11-2, an SEC champ. They would have avenged one of their losses, but they'd have this awful loss to Memphis on the schedule. Just brutal, man. A brutal loss where they got blown out and looked like crap. And it's brutal. It's the wart that you cannot cover up. There's not enough makeup to make that scar go away, even for the big photo. Yet they would have gone to Alabama and won. And Alabama would have been 11-1 instead of 12-1. Alabama would be 11-1 and not the SEC champ because they wouldn't have made it to the championship game. And I don't think Alabama gets left out. I still think Alabama gets put in. And so now it's, do you take Ole Miss at 11-2 or do you take Ohio State? And if you leave Ole Miss out, how do you leave out a team that beat Alabama in Tuscaloosa? Number one, it would have been fantastic radio and fantastic podcast, and we all would have made money off of it. But number two, it would have been the debate where nobody's really wrong. You know what I mean? Alabama fan arguing for Alabama would be he's right. And when Alabama fan says, man, they lost at Memphis, you're right. That's a bad loss. And when Ole Miss fan would have said, but we won in Tuscaloosa. We beat you at your place. Would have been a very – you would have had to go, you're right. And Ohio State would have been able to say, but we belong in this thing. It would have been absolutely perfect. In my opinion, either Alabama or Ohio State would have gotten screwed, and it would have led to an 18 playoff.
You know what's funny is after the pass from Tua Tagovailoa to Devontae Smith to win the national championship – I had a well-respected national college football writer reach out to me and say, "Hey, I'm kicking around the idea of ranking in the offseason the most important Nick Saban era plays in Alabama football. Well, what do you think about my list?" And he goes, "You know, I'd put the Devontae Smith number one, two of the Devontae." I said, I'm cool with that. He goes, "Well, what would you think was number two?" I said, "Well, you know, you could probably argue the Kenyon Drake kickoff return and the national championship went over Clemson." So that's a big one. He goes, "What else needs to be on the list?" I said, "You know what's probably number three for me?" He said, "What?" I said, "The 4th-and-25 Hunter Henry lateral to Alex Collins."
Yeah.
And he stopped for a second. I was like, I mean, without that play, Alabama probably doesn't win it. They may not win a national championship. I said, seriously. But I know it wasn't an Alabama play, but it's one of the biggest in the Nick Saban era at Alabama. Without that play, who knows how that season ends?
I still think they get in. I think it's Ohio State that gets left out, and they would have had a very, very legitimate argument that they got screwed.
Yeah, yeah. That one would have been fascinating. You're absolutely right. It would have been fascinating. And I think a two-loss Auburn last year would have been – I think you'd have had Auburn and Alabama both in the playoff last year. I think Alabama was in either way.
I do, too.
Actually, their argument, Neil, was stronger with Auburn winning the SEC championship, because then your one loss is a road game at the SEC champion. I mean, that's they actually had a weaker argument with Georgia winning. So if they were in with Georgia, they would have been in with Auburn.
Yeah.
I think you'd have had them both in. So I think a two-loss Auburn would have easily gotten in last year. And they could this year, too. If their loss is to Washington, all it means is you have to beat Georgia or Alabama. Well, you know, realistically, they got to beat Georgia or Alabama anyway. They're not going to do this with two conference losses. Preferably, you got to beat Georgia, or preferably, you got to beat Alabama, because if you lose to Alabama, now you either got to have them have two losses, or you got to end up in a three-way, one-loss tie, and it favors you somehow. So, you know, Auburn's path is going to be by beating Alabama, no matter what they do. I mean, they're going to have to beat Alabama to win the West.
You like Auburn to beat Washington Saturday, though, right?
I do. Yeah, I do. I do like them to win that game and then lose to Georgia and Alabama. I think that's the two losses they'll have. Athens has not been kind to Auburn of late. And, frankly, Tuscaloosa hasn't really that much either. So I think they're playing in two tough places. But I like them to beat Washington. I think it's a low-scoring game. I don't think there'll be a ton of offense in this game. I'm thinking something like, you know, a 20-17, 24-21 type game. With Auburn getting the win.
Louisville says they've got Alabama beat. It's going to be easy. Yeah. They're going to go dominate. I mean, they're saying it. It's so stupid. I don't think Louisville has a chance to even stay on the field anyway. And any chance of Alabama sort of taking them lightly disappears with the clippings, right?
Yeah, you'd have to think. You know, it's funny. People are like, God, I can't believe Louisville did that. And it's probably not advisable. I would agree. But, you know, I've seen teams say nothing and Alabama kicks their skull in, too. So I don't know that there's, you know, I guess the extra motivation is bad. But I just can't see, again, it's kind of like I talked about with Ole Miss and Alabama earlier. I can't see how Louisville slows Alabama's offense down. This Alabama offensive line is going to be really good. Damian Harris is consistently a 1,000-yard rusher. Najee Harris looks like he's going to be healthy for this game. You feed in Brian Robinson and Josh Jacobs. They're just loaded at running back. They don't have a proven big-time receiver yet, but they have got so much talent. Watch Jalen Waddell. That's the name that will come out of this game. All the reports from practice, he's a freshman for Alabama, and he has been spectacular, apparently, in the scrimmages. You know, the big story is, you know, Kirk Herbstreit has said this. A lot of people feel this, that with Tagovailoa leading the offense, that it's got a potential to be the best offense of the Saban era. So I'm, you know, inclined to believe that the defense will have some time to get right in the secondary if the offense is that good.
We talked about Tua the last time you were on. It's still a very compelling storyline to me because he's in the very first paragraph of everybody's Heisman story. And he's played. Yep. He's played one half of a meaningful game. Yet, if you make me list Heisman candidates, I'm listing him before I list Shea Patterson, just because of the team. Yeah. The team that he plays for, and the arm talent that I saw. Is that unfair to him, or is that just part of the deal?
It's almost. We've talked about this on the show. It's almost impossible for him to. It's impossible for him to exceed expectations for Alabama fans. I mean, what I just said is not only what Kirk Herbstreit feels, but it's what the rank-and-file Alabama fans feel. Almost all of them that call our show, that I've talked to, feel like with Tua Tagovailoa leading the offense, it'll be a darn near unstoppable offense for Alabama. I think the expectations are more than 3,500 pass yards, somewhere in the neighborhood of somewhere north of 30 touchdown passes. The interception numbers are likely to go up because you'll be throwing more, but they don't expect him to throw a ton of picks. I mean, it's almost impossible for him. All he could maybe do is meet expectations among Alabama fans. And then when you see the fact, and I doubt this has ever happened in college football history, that you would have a Heisman favorite in Vegas who's never even started a football game in college. I mean, that could not have happened before, right?
Not that I can recall, no.
Yeah. I don't even know who it would be, because even a running back would have started at some point before he's a Heisman favorite. And it's just, this is such a unique situation in college football. So it's like nothing really we've ever seen. And there's still the craziest part about it is there's still heavy speculation he doesn't even start the game against Louisville, that Jalen Hurts actually gets the start.
Okay, I was going to ask you, what's your anticipation of what happens with Hurts? What are you hearing? And then I mean, what's you, Ryan Brown, who's a really smart guy who's watched that program for 10 years under Saban, what do you anticipate?
Saban, if nothing else, is a loyal guy. I mean, he is loyal to his seniors, but he also had, I guess you could call it a cryptic quote the other day in one of the news conferences where he said, and there was no explanation with this, and nobody, you know, he'd already talked so much about the quarterbacks. This was kind of on the tail end of his quarterback talk. So he didn't expound on, you know, are you talking quarterbacks here? But his quote was, I owe it to the team to play the best players. I owe it to the team to play the best players. And a lot of people pulled that quote out of a, you know, 30-minute news conference and said, that's Nick Saban talking about Tua Tagovailoa, that Jalen Hurts has really done nothing to lose this job. He's just been beaten out by a better quarterback, and I owe it to the team to play the better player.
Well,
so there's that school of thought.
And he goes out on the recruiting trail, and they go out, and people say, how do they get, you know, five-star linebacker Joe Smith when they already have 12 five-star linebackers? And the answer is because he tells Joe Smith, look, if you're best, you'll play.
And there's no doubt about that. And I'll tell you this, and I think I've told it here before, and I apologize if I have, but I think it bears repeating here. Barrett Jones, who was pretty highly recruited out of Memphis, right? I mean, when Barrett was coming out of Memphis, he was a very highly regarded offensive lineman. He tells the story, by the way, of it's a pretty cool story, really. He was like, I remember Stanford upsetting USC. It's almost a humble brag, but if you hear Barrett tell it, he certainly does not tell it in this fashion. He said, I remember Stanford upsetting USC because Jim Harbaugh called me from the locker room. Harbaugh was recruiting me and called him from the locker room after they upset USC and one of the biggest upsets in college football history. So Barrett was highly recruited. And he said, I was leaning Alabama already, but one of the things that put it over the top was when Nick Saban sat down, he never once promised me playing time. What he promised me is that he would challenge me and make me a better player through challenging me and allow me to earn that playing time. He was like, he was really the only coach that put it that way. He goes, every other coach was telling me, hey, you're good enough to come in here and play right away. And he said, Saban never said that. Saban said, if you'll come, I will challenge you to the point that you are becoming a better football player, which will earn the playing time. But that's how he sells it on the recruiting trail. And it's hard to sell that if it's pretty obvious that the quarterback that can't get the playing time is the better of the two quarterbacks. And I'll tell you this one more. I mean, and I don't know how much Saban thinks about this, but if you lose Tua Tagovailoa, you lose two quarterbacks because his brother is committed, who, by the way, in his first high school game this season, he played last year, but his first high school game at Thompson threw for 300 yards in the first half. So this kid, he can spin it, man. And I know, it's unbelievable. And if you lose Tua Tagovailoa, you're losing Talia Tagovailoa as well. So, you know, there's that gamble too. How does this affect the future of your quarterback spot?
The people that are trying to tie the story about the Birmingham City Councilman who resigned, there's some accusations and such.
Jay Roberson.
Yeah, people are trying to tie that to Alabama football in a roundabout way. Is there any possibility there are legs there, or is that just sort of conspiracy theory stuff?
I think it's a little conspiracy theory. My assumption is that the tie there, that people are trying to tie it together, is because his wife took a job with the City of Alabaster School Board, which is the governing body that governs Thompson High School. It's in the City of Alabaster, just south of Birmingham. Jay, to my mind, and I know Jay fairly well. Jay played at Alabama A&M. To my knowledge, really has no ties to Alabama football. I don't know what his tie would be, other than the fact that he's been a fairly prominent Alabama or, you know, Birmingham businessman and Birmingham public servant over his life. I don't know what his tie to Alabama, other than that, would be. It's kind of a bizarre story. If it is true, I don't think there's any truth to it, though. No.
Yeah, it seems kind of conspiratorial at this point to me when I read it. All right, the game that maybe intrigues me the most, on Saturday, for whatever reason, is Michigan Notre Dame. But the game that intrigues me the most for the weekend, beyond a shadow of any doubt, is this LSU-Miami game. Number one, if Miami wins, really all that's left to beat them is Clemson the rest of the year.
Yeah.
And they become this really interesting team. And then number two, man, we've done this with LSU. If LSU loses on Saturday and then loses in 2 weeks at Jordan-Hare, the recipe for a complete and total cluster, you know what, meltdown is really not many ingredients away from coming to fruition.
Yeah. I could see them being 3-5 going into the Alabama game.
Oh my God.
I could easily see that happen.
Oh, I can get them. I can get them there. Go ahead.
You look at their schedule, and you can find 5 losses before that Alabama game. And that's the only reason I pointed out is not because it's Alabama, but that's because they got the bye before Alabama. So,
if
you wanted to play that out and say, you know, you would make a change, you might make a change in a bye week, right?
Yeah.
I'm going back and forth on this game. I currently have Miami winning it, but I feel uneasy about that pick. Miami's offensive line apparently is a train wreck, and you know LSU is going to have quality defensive linemen. So I think that's going to be tough on Malik Rozier, who can be – he's got a propensity to turn it over. And here's the thing that worries me most about Miami. Their defense, Manny Diaz had a pretty good defense last year statistically, but where they were exceptional, obviously, was creating those turnovers, and they really bought into it, that turnover chain deal. The likelihood of you doing that in back-to-back years is pretty low. You may not remember this, but 2 years ago, Alabama set, I think it was a school record or maybe a college football record. They had like 10 defensive touchdowns. And then last year they had 1. And Alabama did not get any worse on defense. They were just as good defensively. It's just those things don't happen in back-to-back years. So that's the thing that worries me about that Miami offense. Now That said, Joe Burrow's making his first start. And I don't know what to expect out of him. I know he wasn't good enough to earn the Ohio State job. It's why he's at LSU. And if you believe, and I don't know if I do, but if you believe it took him a while to beat out Miles Brennan, who, you know, for the starting job, I don't have a whole lot of confidence in that situation either. I'm with you. That's an intriguing game, but I think it's an ugly game, Neil. I think that game's like a 13-10 type game. I just don't see a whole lot of offense out of either one of those teams in that game.
Yeah, when I say intriguing, I just mean based on the drama. There's just such a potential for because here's LSU. I've been saying this for a while now, is the most volatile team that I can think of, because they could go 9-10 wins, but I could find them six losses before they get to Alabama.
Yeah,
I mean, if I told you they lost to Miami, Auburn, Ole Miss, Florida, Georgia, and Mississippi State. Where am I saying anything crazy?
Yeah, I mean, there's not even – I mean, I guess the biggest upset in that group would be Ole Miss. I would imagine Ole Miss – is that game in Oxford or is it in Baton Rouge?
It's in Baton Rouge, but Ole Miss plays them better in Baton Rouge than they do Oxford. I mean, the Ole Miss kids get up for that. I mean, sky high for that game.
Yeah, I would imagine by the time that game rolls around, I mean, LSU might be a touchdown favorite in that game, maybe. Would you think?
That's probably right. I mean, depending on – I mean, the deal is, you know, I mean, if Ole Miss wins on Saturday against Texas Tech, and what you just said about turnovers with Alabama and such is what Chase has been saying about Texas Tech for a while. Texas Tech forced 29 turnovers last year. Kudos to them.
But you're not going to do that again.
I'd say you're not.
No, I mean, it's so hard to do.
And so if Ole Miss is 2-1 – Ole Miss would be 1-2, 3-1 – going to LSU, assuming that they come out of the Alabama game just quasi-healthy and they can heal up the next week against Kent State, they'll be sort of primed to knock somebody off when they go down to Baton Rouge.
Yeah, I mean, it may be less than 7. I mean, when you consider what LSU has been through. But none of those are crazy. I mean, heck, Miami's basically a pick 'em. Auburn will be favored in that game at Jordan-Hare Stadium. Georgia certainly will be favored over them. Florida, I think that game's in Gainesville, right? This is the second half of that back-to-back Gainesville trip.
It's in Gainesville. Mississippi State has to go to Baton Rouge, but I'm telling you, this state team they're good.
They'll be favored. State's favored in that game. I mean, I think the only game the only game LSU would be even favored in that group by a significant amount is the Ole Miss game, and even then it's probably a touchdown or less. Yeah. So that's not even that crazy. Those aren't even any crazy losses in there for them to be a six-loss team going to the bye week.
At which point, I don't think he could survive it. I don't think anyone there.
Yeah, it'd be tough.
Oliva couldn't survive it. He couldn't survive it. All right, last thing, because I wanted to ask you about this, and it's not about a particular game. Now that it has become much easier for people to legally bet, you know, in Mississippi, there are people that are going to casinos in Tunica and Vicksburg and all over and placing legal wagers on the games that we just talked about. Now that that is the case, from a broadcast standpoint, when you're in your man cave on Saturday watching football games, will the betting line become less taboo to talk about?
I don't know why it is so taboo. And I think I'm trying to remember who it was. One of the networks had said they will not reference it this year. I just don't know what people are scared of. I mean, I'll play in pools and things like that. But as far as like calling a bookie and getting action, I never do that. I know who I would ask who a good bookie is. But if you said, hey, who's a bookie you could call? I don't even know. I have no earthly idea. I don't have like a Five Dimes account or, you know, any of those where you can do the offshore stuff. But I'm always aware of the line because, first of all, Las Vegas is really good at that. And it tells me the level of competitiveness of this game. I mean, for instance, Florida Atlantic's about a 20.5, 21-point dog at Oklahoma. I'm interested in that game because of Lane Kiffin and Florida Atlantic, but you know what that tells me is if Florida Atlantic's anywhere close, this is a massive upset. I really need to pay attention. And I probably know that because of the names of the teams. The other thing that interests me is I am always fascinated in the end moments of the game where the line is because it is always fun just to see that get totally blown up. Somebody backdoor cover a game. I find that hilarious to watch how those happen because it's any other time that play doesn't matter to you. But when you know a last-second touchdown flipped it to the other side, it is hilarious to watch that happen. But I just don't know why it's taboo because, as you've said, the Supreme Court has said, hey, it's up to the states. And a lot of the states have said, okay, it's legal. And the other ones will follow. It'll take some time, but the other ones are going to follow. I mean, for instance, here in our state, you know how staunchly against gambling our state has been. We've got a gubernatorial election coming up in November. And the Democratic candidate, who's Walt Maddox, he's the mayor of Tuscaloosa, and he's very well respected. And he was like one of the, you know, faces of the recovery effort after the 2011 tornadoes. And he was spectacular there for the city of Tuscaloosa. But he's a Democrat, so he's fighting an uphill battle in the state of Alabama. But he has come out in support of legalizing gambling in the state of Alabama on sports, and just sports gambling. You know, the lottery has been voted on in this state and voted down. But I really do think sports gambling, this state has an appetite for it. And it would be regulated, obviously. So it will be interesting to see how that helps him. Again, he's a Democrat, so this is a Republican state. He's fighting an uphill battle already. But it's interesting to see a candidate that has already come out in support of it in this state. I would be interested to see. I know the casinos in Mississippi hope this state never goes to that because
for sure.
They'll make plenty of money.
For sure.
Yeah, they'll make plenty of money. Tunica and those places, they'll make a killing off Alabama people.
No question about it. You know, like if you're watching, say, Kentucky and Central Michigan on Saturday, unless you went to one of those two schools or your kid plays for one of those two teams, the line's, 17 or whatever. I'm not sure exactly what the line is. Let's say it's 17. And it's in the fourth quarter of a game, and Kentucky is up 20 points. The only reason you're watching that game at this point is because of the betting line. If I'm an announcer, I'm keeping people on my broadcast by saying, well, Central Michigan can't win the game, but they can sure change pocketbooks with this drive.
And Musburger used to do it real low key, and you knew his buzzwords, and it was funny. But Musburger probably had action on it. But he was also, I think, trying to keep people interested.
Yeah, it's why people watch NFL games. People say, you know, I think it's going to be interesting now that it's become more mainstream. You don't have to be in Las Vegas to make a legal wager. You can be, you know, if you live in Memphis, you can be in Tunica in half an hour or less, and you can make a perfectly legal wager on Central Michigan, Kentucky, if that's what you're. If that's where your heart is, you can do that easily. And so I think it changes It should change the way the games are talked about and broadcast. I don't know if it will or not, but it'll be something to watch.
Well, I think you'll see a lot of people from Birmingham. I know people that are already planning this, that they'll plan a weekend, they'll come over and they'll play, you know, the golf courses on Friday. They'll make their bets and watch the games on Saturday. They'll make some NFL bets on Sunday, play some more golf, and come back to Birmingham. You know, make a long weekend out of it. It'll be great for Mississippi tourism. You wonder at what point people in Alabama say, oh, it's, you know, you get on board. And again, I'm, you know, look, I got no dog in the fight. I will never, I'm fine with it. If the people vote on it and they vote for it, I'm cool with it in our state. I'm not even going to benefit from it. I doubt I would ever make a bet. I might, but I'm not going to do it frequently. It's just not something that I'm inclined to do. So, you know, I'm about as ambivalent on this as I could, it can be. But if the Supreme Court to me says, all right, it's up to the states, you know, the way I've always viewed things like that on the big topics, let the people vote. You know, let's throw it up for a vote. And if more people say yes than no, then it becomes legal in our state. And that's to me, that's all the voters deserve.
Well, I think I probably speak for a lot of people who live in Mississippi who understand that the roads need to be, that there's a lot of infrastructure that needs to be attacked, and that some of the schools probably need a little influx of cash. We probably hope that you all just don't do that. Just come here and spend your money, and that'll be cool.
Every time the lottery has come up for a vote in our state, there are a few people that have spent more on advertising against it than the Mississippi casinos, trust me.
Yeah. Well, and the Florida lottery says, no!
No, y'all don't need that. Not in Alabama.
Yeah, I think Mississippi's going to pass a lottery, too. So we're going into the 21st century, finally. So we're getting there. Well, hey, enjoy your day. I know that you'll have a lot of coverage next week on WJOX. People can watch you on Sunday night on ABC 3340. They can follow you on Twitter, and we look forward to getting you back on the Beer Garden as well.
Anytime. You know I'm always willing to do it. I appreciate you having me on.
Ryan, thanks so much. Really appreciate it. Talk to you soon. Have a great weekend.
Yeah, you too.
Our thanks to Ryan for his time today on the show. Enjoy this first weekend of college football. I know everyone looks forward to it all off season, all summer. It's finally here. Enjoy it. We'll come back next week. We'll recap week one, and we'll also look ahead to week one of the NFL slate. The pro guys get started for real next Thursday. So we'll talk. We'll get a podcast up to you before kickoff of that Thursday game. That's the plan. And the topic we're hoping will be NFL. Might also touch on some of the pennant races that are getting started. I know a lot of you are Braves fans, Cardinals fans. As we record this, both of those teams very much in the heat of the postseason picture. So, again, thanks to Ryan. Thank you for joining us. Until next week, take care.